And shall we do questions or comments? Will you do them on cards or just,
yeah, just
hands?
For it. Carl's got the microphone.
Oh, Carl has a microphone. So Carl calls on the piece.
Soon to be Alice holding the microphone.
Try to hold it
level. You mentioned you're a libertarian. What do you think about the libertarian political movement in this country? And also, do you have any particular thoughts on objectivism?
I think David's over my head. Objectivism is over my head, too. These two warring factions of descendants of Ayn Rand, what they're fighting about, David Kelly and the other group, I can't even follow it. It's beyond me. The libertarian, I'm reluctant to identify myself that way because people don't know what it means. They think it means libertine. Classical liberal, Cato Institute tried, and maybe that's better. I wish we had a better name. I think the Libertarian Party has gotten a bad reputation because they have run some wacky people like Howard Stern for office. And if you go to a Libertarian Party event, there are some people who are pretty far out there, and that scares off a lot of people. Plus, America has a tradition of these two parties. It's hard to break. I always had the most hope that the Democrats would embrace the libertarian ideas.
And they once did.
But I'm struck, like, I went to get blurbs for the book, and it's, who's it from? Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Peggy Noonan, Steve Forbes, Bernard Goldberg, author of Bias. The liberals are just, I'm icky to them. Just because I like capitalism. Yes?
Yes, you mentioned the war on drugs, and I really appreciated your perspective on how this is also a problem, you know, at a governmental level. What is your awareness around the drug treatment industry, about how that is a part of what you mentioned?
The drug treatment industry is truly hostile to liberalization of the laws. I did a show on addiction, and when I've done shows on legalization, they are the most hostile. I think if you invest your life, a lot of them were addicts. They are of the belief that they were helpless, and if only it could be banned, that would save people. I think they're so focused on what they do, they don't get the big picture. Sure, why don't you just hand the mic around?
Hi, John. First of all, I want to thank...
Let me actually stop you. I think when it's a group like this, you live in the same neighborhood, it's nice to get to know your neighbors. So why don't you say who you are before you ask your question?
Well, I live in the neighborhood about 120 miles south of here, but I'm David Henderson, and I'm an economist down in Monterey. First of all, I just want to thank you for everything you've done. It's tremendous. I mean, Friday night is special.
Thank you. David wrote the Fortune Encyclopedia of Economics.
Thank you. And second, there was that threat to your career about the summer of 2000, something like that. There were a lot of people trying to get you off the air over some little mistake you made, and they were trying to blow it up. And I'm wondering, don't want to rehash that, but I'm wondering, is that an ongoing threat, or are you fairly confident that the market will work and you will be in this kind of job, whether it's this network or another?
I mean, I'm pretty confident I could get a job at some cable network. I'm not confident. I'm not confident that I can stay at ABC. I was truly. The market speaks sometimes. This last special got great ratings. It went much higher than a regular 2020, and it may be the top-rated ABC show for the week, which is just surprising. I think people like these top 10 lists, and that comforts me. But I'm not confident. I'll give the complicated economic explanation because it's kind of interesting. That I don't know that there is a future for news in commercial television anymore. These days we get minute-by-minute ratings, so if you get a graph of a show. If you try to do serious subjects rather than Paris Hilton, it tends to go down. It's just a lot of pressure to appeal for the younger people, because all the advertisers care about is the 18 to 49 age group, because people our age may be wealthier, but we're not about to change our brand of car or shampoo, or if we even if we do, we're going to die soon and not buy so many. So all they care about is the young people, to the point that they don't even give us the rating results for people my age. So there's now all this pressure to get these younger viewers, and I'm doing pretty well, but if they can replace 2020 with a reality show, they will. But I think eventually there'll be a home box office-like channel for news, and that'll be the new home for serious news.
What do you, just briefly, what is your prediction for this election coming up?
I don't have any greater expertise on predicting the election than anybody else, so I won't even try. Sorry.
My name is Arlene Diamond. And, John, I'm curious. You were talking about collateral damage and the fact that in looking at some of the government regulatory processes, nobody really looks at the collateral damage that's involved. And I was reminded some years ago, I was a guest at Stanford Law School at the first ever course on children's rights. And it was an experimental course with the Stanford law students. And the thing that struck me most was that in their zeal to save children, the approach was so laser beam focused and so linear that everybody else's rights kind of fell by the wayside and became totally unimportant in the process, so that they're looking only, you know, in one tiny angle. So when you were talking, that flashed in my mind, and I was thinking, when you start talking with your peers, with your colleagues who have in the past respected you, and, you know, suddenly are turning aside, can you ever get to them in terms of the collateral damage or side effects kind of issues? Are they at all open to looking at that? And that's a great generalization.
I mean, it really takes, you're asking someone to give you a lot of time to listen to the collateral damage, which is a long list. It's a little dull, and it's worked on my wife, but I've been hammering at her for 20 years, and she's starting to come around. But no, my colleagues don't want to listen. My children are there. It's exciting. My daughter is a freshman at Wesleyan. Wesleyan is the campus named by Mother Jones magazine as the number one activist campus, and she's not very political, but she's hanging in there and saying, wait a second, often enough to make me proud.
Hi, Jared Wallstein. I was wondering if you had considered doing something on airline insecurity. I mean, at the same time, we're getting studies showing that as many weapons they're getting through now as there were before 9/11, people are smuggling packages and planes, writing notes to the FBI and saying, hey, I've got a box and a knife and a gun on the plane, and it takes them 3 months to find it. At the same time, they're going into this CAPS to computer-assisted passenger screening. And so far, they've already done things like prevented a Los Angeles comic who was very critical of Bush from boarding, searching his pregnant wife, preventing a nun from boarding because she wrote an anti-war newspaper.
So you're surprised that they're incompetent? last month's Reason magazine has a wonderful cover story on the insanity of what the the TSA is doing. And I did a Give Me a Break on it when they came out with the color-coded thing. Pointing out that, remember the emergency broadcast system?
Yeah.
This is a test. It annoyed us for years. This is the government's warning system. It's never been used. And it's just as well, because the private media get the word out better. But, I mean, it was supposed to be for an emergency. Wasn't September 11th an emergency? The Earth has never been used, but they still pay $1 million for it. So after September 11th, Congress, this is a long answer, bear with me a second. Congress voted 100-0, or the Senate voted 100-0, and Congress almost unanimously to federalize airport security. And Tom Daschle said, you can't professionalize if you don't federalize. And everybody bought it. So I did a Give Me a Break pointing out that in Europe they tried federalizing it. It didn't work, and they went to federal supervision, them setting the standards, and private contractors competing, because you can fire the failing private contractor. You can't fire the government. I pointed out that you can go to a foreign country and stick a piece of plastic in a wall, and a bank will give you $600. And you can give a stranger this same card, and he doesn't even speak your language, and he'll rent you a car. What a miracle of the private sector, and we just take it for granted. The government can't even count the votes in Florida. It was the government that screwed up on September 11th. It was legal to bring those little knives on planes. There was no law against open cockpit doors. They had information that Arab men were going around to flight schools trying to learn how to fly planes. They didn't do anything. So it was government failure that caused it. And our response is to say, oh my God, we got to bring in the government. It's just what we do. All my colleagues laughed at the give me a break. They said, that was great, but of course we have to federalize it. It just bewilders me. But the other hand, yes, maybe they're sneaking in more guns now, but let's not get hysterical over terrorism either. It was horrible what happened, but 3,000 deaths, it hasn't happened since. And we lose 3,000 people to car accidents every month, and we live with that. So let's not bring in more police to the air traffic control. I think ATF now stands for, TSF, TSA stands for thousands standing around. Sorry for that long answer.
My name is John.
Just hold it tight to your mouth.
Okay. I wanted you to expand on your environmental beliefs, because you were talking about the drug laws, how they don't do anything. Why do you believe environmental laws would do any better?
Because catalytic converters have made the air cleaner, because sewage treatment plants have cleaned the waters. I jumped in the Hudson River last week to illustrate that the water is cleaner than it used to be. I don't see how the private sector is going to do that on its own with community property like the Hudson River.
We have a book coming out.
Though the Independent Institute has a book coming out that may explain it to me if I can understand it. I think we need some. I think we have enough rules. I think we could get rid of half of them, and the air and water would still be gradually getting cleaner in rich countries. People care about the environment, and we do better. Every time somebody buys a new car and junks an old one, the air gets cleaner. So I don't think we need more laws, and we have some insane laws, and I've reported on some of them. But I do think it's a role. I don't see who's going to do it beside the government until I read this book, I guess.
You mentioned, someone mentioned earlier in front of me about how do your peers feel. Now, it just so happens by coincidence, I do what you do for the public, I do for the medical profession. And my peers are the worst potential, the worst source of feeling that I could possibly go to. I blame it on emotional jealousy. You know, as popular as you are, I bet you got a lot of peers that don't like you and will not help you. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement. There are a lot of them, and that's why I don't win the awards anymore. It's funny, my older brother, my smarter older brother, who is in your profession, he's a research scientist, has sort of come around to this way of thinking and is reading Hayek and has debated Marcia Angel and these conflict of interest rules, and the amount of hatred of capitalism in medicine is just silly, and the doctors may kill the golden goose there.
Hi, John. I'm Shannon. I'm a big fan. I'm a registered libertarian, and the one area that I've always had some conflicted personal views in is the death penalty. Can you give me your opinion on the prison system a little broader and the death penalty?
The prison system, I think we have too many people locked up, but a lot of that is because of the drug laws. I don't have a strong opinion about the death penalty either way. And I think that, I think of Cato. I mean, abortion and the death penalty is sort of a place where libertarians are all over the place. If you believe it's a life, you may say no abortion. I kind of think life begins at conception, but a woman has a right to kill anybody who's living inside her. That is not well received by a lot of people. Whoever has the mic, go ahead.
My name is Philip Mitchell. My comment is about in Britain, the BBC has apologized and two people got fired. And my understanding is that in English law countries, that if somebody makes an actual false statement, even about a politician, that they can be taken to court, and if it's proven that they were slanderous, the person who made the slanderous remark has to pay all the court costs and reimburse the person. And I suspect that BBC decided that Blair might take the BBC to court and sue their ass. Do you know anything about that or have any comment?
I don't know anything about that case. I do know that the media are quite frightened of British libel laws. Free speech, as we know it, does not exist in the same way there because it is so easy to sue.
My name is Sue Kleinen.
Hello? Go, hold it tight.
Okay, I'm Sue Kleinen. I want to know how much influence you feel you've had on other reporters in changing their liberal bias. And if you feel you haven't had much, why not? And how could you get more? I'm really looking for a ripple effect from you.
Me too.
Well, civil liberties.
I don't really think... when I did Are We Scaring Ourselves to Death, I naively thought my colleagues were going to watch this and say, oh my goodness, I know that bar graph really shows the comparative risk and change. And it got no attention. It made no difference. It got some attention in Sweden for some reason. But it made hardly a dent. I think gradually now, I've repeatedly done these stories, and around ABC, the producers are a little more sensitive to hyping silly risks. But, as again, changing people's minds about these things is remarkably tough. I have been arguing with my wife intensely for 22 years, and finally I'm making some progress. I'm not making progress with my colleagues.
My name is Hartland. You mentioned thalidomide in your speech. Did you know that last year thalidomide in the United States had revenues of over $100 million?
Yes, they have brought it back, and they're using it for other things now, but they're warning pregnant women not to take it. And that's how it should be. At least they've allowed it to come back. They aren't as crazy about that as they are about DDT, for example.
I guess I didn't quite get to the question is, given that, do you have any sense of how long thalidomide was kept off the market by the FDA when it might have saved tens of thousands of lives? Because it is now being used in cancer therapy.
20 years?
Hi, my name is Sandra Eckstein, and I saw you in Portola Valley. I know you're...
It works. Fine.
Oh, this way? Okay. I saw you in Portola Valley when you were involved, well, you still are involved with the foundation called Media in the Classroom. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I felt it was quite worthwhile, and we donate to it, and I think it's a wonderful idea, and people should know more about it.
David said she's not a plant. She actually is kind of a plant because when I was autographing her book, she asked about it, and I said, oh, good, if I don't bring it up, maybe you could ask about it. it's called intheclassroom.org, or that's how you find it on the web, or Stossel in the Classroom. Teachers have written me saying, oh, I wish I taped that show. It would have been great to show my students to explain free markets to them. and Bob Chittister, who helped do the Free to Choose series on PBS with Milton Friedman, came to me and said, why don't I try to get ABC's permission to buy these things and get them into classrooms? What a great idea, I thought. And I said, go for it, knowing the ABC lawyers would eat them alive and they would never allow it, but it was worth a shot. And he patiently beat on them for 2 years until he got their permission. He has established this charity, and through contributions to from generous people and brilliant and wise people like you, Sandra, he's now gotten these tapes into a quarter of America's high schools and many colleges. 2 million kids watch them every year with some text that goes along that explains capitalism and free markets. It's a wonderful thing. If any of you want to participate, talk to Sandra or just go on the web to intheclassroom.org. No. I hope to, but I don't want to force it. I'm waiting for them to ask me. Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, my name is Larry Hirsch, and a friend of mine learned that if you do a lot of top 10 lists, you get a letter from Letterman appropriately. But on your top 10 list, what was the number one?
Number one was, and we try to find one character that we reuse in the hour and go back to for continuity, and we interview a bunch of people for it. And the person in this case, who I didn't think was going to be good for television, turned out to be, was Steve Moore, who's head of the Club for Growth. And he wrote a book, co-wrote a book called Things Are Getting Better All the Time. And myth number one was that life is getting worse. And so we talked about all the kids are scared about crime and people are whining about poverty when, in fact, we're getting richer, crime is going down, and the air and water are getting cleaner, which is what I jumped in the Hudson to try to illustrate. So that was number one.
To just make a couple of comments regarding government and the legal profession from my own perspective. And one thing I would like to say is that being a local council member for 20 years, I really feel that people that live in a community can have some influence on change at the local level. And I think that's where you can really see it. I think when it gets to higher levels, it tends to just go on its own and people do not really have a chance to influence it so much. And the same thing with the legal profession. My husband and I own a law practice and we do litigation. And in your comments about how lawsuits really take away from the person that needs it, I think people have to take more of a responsibility with their local government and with their own situation to have the right person and the right people to help them, and that you can have an influence on the local level and your personal level if you take responsibility.
Okay, Sue, thank you. And let's just do a few more questions, and then I'm getting tired of a long day, and then I'll sign some more books, and that'll be it. Yeah.
I was wondering, you talk about when the media speaks, and there's always a slant, and there's very few objective media stories. And one of the things that come to mind is they talk about a few years ago, there's all the shark attacks. They're saying sharks are going rampant. And it turns out later on that year, there are less shark attacks than the last 5 years previous. And it's just a slow media summer, so they focused on it. Is there some kind of media outlet that is objective, that doesn't put a spin to it? I mean, that in the United States that you could read and get the true story, because it seems like either way it's leaning one way or the other. Is there one that you would recommend?
I see three questions in that, 3 points that feel sort of separate. Though it's funny, I do this too. I don't even understand this myself. We talk about bias, liberal, right-wing, left-wing bias. And then there are the irresponsible scare stories, like the year of the shark. But why are they the same thing? Why is it the liberals tend to do the scare stories? I'm not sure, but it does work that way. But to answer piece by piece, and there's a lot on the sharks in here. It actually was not true that there were fewer attacks that year. There were a high number of attacks that year. More than average, but not by a lot, and there were just as many a few years back, but a few years back was election year, so the press had something else.
And then there were just as many about 5 years back, but that was the year of the OJ trial. So it was just a slow news summer, and it's a dramatic story, and it's not that the reporter is biased, they're just intellectually lazy, and it's a dramatic, oh, shark attack, and they just get caught up in the frenzy, and they don't really check it out. Is there one source that's objective? I don't think that's how it works. I mean, I trust reason, and I read everything, and I get different bits from everywhere, but I think that's what you have to do, just not rely on any one source. Go back and forth, because everybody gets it wrong sometimes.
My name is Bill Dwyer. You talked about how you've been at your wife and trying to convince her for the last 20 years. How did you get into libertarianism, and who was instrumental in sort of getting you involved?
I just saw that the regulation wasn't working, and I was reading the Times and the other publications respected by the people in my peer group, and it just was whiny welfare state, bigger government stuff that didn't make sense. I was reading the conservative press, and they seemed to be sort of mean-spirited, and they wanted to police the bedroom. And then I discovered Reason Magazine, and I was already, my thinking had come around, but that's what gave me the courage to fight ABC on some of these things, because I knew I wasn't alone. There were people who thought about it more than I did, and there was an intellectual basis for what I was thinking. One last question.
One last question. When Barbara leaves, are you going to take over her soft lens, and what will happen to the show?
am I going to take over her what? Her soft
lens.
The soft lens, I said. No, she gets the same lens I get. It's the same camera. I would like to take over. I'm narcissistic enough to want to host the show all by myself, and I hope I will get to do that. ABC will decide in May what they will do. I hope the show will go on. If the ratings stay up, I think it will. Last week's show was very encouraging. I hope to do it myself. And thank you very much.
Hey, before you get up.